Hello, I'm Neil Dropkin, and this is number 0310 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0310. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, remembering legendary actor Theodore Bacall, who passed away last week. He was Broadway's original Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music. Did it bother him that he didn't get the role in the movie?
For 5 minutes, I was upset about that, naturally. But frankly, it wasn't in the cards. Because on stage, the star of the play was Mary Martin, and she was exactly 10 years older than I, which on the stage you could get away with. There was no way that she could play this role in the movie. And since they couldn't take her, they couldn't take me. Not politics.
Donna McGrain, owner of the Pleasant Valley Drive-In Theater in Connecticut. What is the lure of the drive-in?
You get to see parents spending quality time with their kids that probably during the week they don't get a lot of time to do, or it's sitting in front of a TV, and people don't even come so much to see the movies. They come to visit, they come to tailgate, they come to picnic with their friends, they're meeting new people. You know, on a Friday, Saturday night, there'll probably be 200 kids down front playing kickball or frisbee or just having a great time with people they've never met. And it's just a whole different experience that people don't get nowadays.
Diversity and multicultural training. Sam Mack, who talks about arranged marriages.
I think the appeal of arranged marriages is that they last really long. And it's because they don't just look at the initial physical attraction or what the person does or what you have in common. There's a lot more elements that make a marriage last. So a lot of times in arranged marriages, you're getting family buy-in on the front end.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0310, was Neil Drabkin, a Montreal lawyer, former chief of staff to Stockwell Day in the Conservative government, a serial federal candidate, and, to hear him tell it, a definite future member of parliament. By the way, he's also a hard worker and a damn nice guy. Thank you very much, Neil, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, I'm starting off this first story by saying that it happened in Florida, which is often kind of redundant because a high percentage of bizarre stories seem to radiate from that southern state. This is just merely the latest. Police are working to identify a Florida man who apparently knocked himself out after a few seconds of headbutting a bus out of anger over a $2 fare. The Winter Haven Police Department, which posted the video of the incident to its Facebook page, said the man got off the bus at around 11:35 a.m. when it arrived at its stop. Now, police said the man told the driver he wanted to go to another location, and he became extremely agitated when the driver told him that it would be an additional $2 fare to travel to the other location. Now, the driver locked the bus and went inside the enclosed part of the bus terminal, leaving the passenger sitting alone on a bench. The man walked away but returned to the still-locked bus 4 minutes later. The video shows the man get a running start before headbutting the door of the bus, shattering the glass window. The man falls to the ground and appears to be knocked out for a few seconds before collecting himself and running away. Now, wrote the police on their Facebook page, file this under what not to do when you get mad regarding bus fare. Ouch. Well, this was clearly a case of by using his head, this guy definitely wasn't using his head. And by the way, I've seen the video. And what's even more interesting is about 50 yards away on another bench is a guy sitting down watching. And when Headbutt Boy takes that running leap and is apparently just lying there for a few minutes motionless, the other guy on the bench doesn't even flinch or move to help. He just sits there and watches. It's classic. Sad, but classic. Anyway, an Ohio woman whose house was damaged by a fire said she believes her cousin set the fire intentionally because he can't get with her. Yep, you heard me right. The Warren Township Fire Department said the Leavittsburg fire is believed to have started at around 3:45 in the morning in Heather and Dennis Tenney's garage before spreading to their home and a neighboring house. Turnbull County Fire Investigation Unit Chief Matt Balut said the fire is being treated as suspicious. Heather Tenney said she believes she knows who was behind the blaze. It was cause of my cousin, and I don't want to mention no names, Heather Tracy told local television stations. He is mad because he can't get with me. I'm married to my husband. Okay, let's stop there. Her first sentence here is, he is mad because he can't get with me. So since they're cousins, is there any reason for her to state her second sentence, I am married to my husband? I mean, that first sentence should be more than enough of an explanation. Or is she implying that if she weren't married, she might get down with her cousin? Cue the Deliverance music. Speaking of her husband, Dennis Tenney told local media that a conflict with her wife's relative had escalated via text messages. He did not say whether the relative was his wife's cousin, but the relative had asked to come over, and Tenney said he told the relative no. Dennis Tenney said he and his wife have seen an unidentified man walking back and forth in front of their house around midnight. Investigators say they are seeking a person of interest in the fire. Okay, you know what family trees really need, right? Branches. Lots of branches. You don't want a family tree that resembles a telephone pole. Shadow Health Minister Darren Miller requested details from government officials of UFO sightings at the Cardiff, Wales airport. He also wanted to know if research into the sightings would be funded. The response from the Welsh government is a lot of words here that I really am not going to try to pronounce. And no, it's not because they were in Welsh. The statement was delivered in Klingon, the language of course, the fictional alien species on Star Trek. There is a translation to the statement, however. The translation is, the minister will reply in due course. However, this is a non-devolved matter. A nonplussed Miller then noted, I've always suspected that labor ministers came from another planet. This response confirms it. You know, it's nice to see politicians with a sense of humor, unless, of course, they're all being deathly serious. Then, if that's the case, we have issues here. And finally, in this portion of the Stuff File News, before we get to our first segment here on the program, the description of a car crash in Gwinnett County, Georgia, sounds pretty spectacular. A Toyota 4Runner, witnesses say, ran a red light and hit a car, but kept going. The SUV then hit two signs, shot into the air, and hit another car while flipping, and then crashed into the front entrance of a Taco Bell fast food restaurant. The driver, investigators say, stated that he was trying to commit suicide. He didn't succeed. Jared Voldemariam only had minor injuries and was arrested on charges of reckless conduct, reckless driving, and various traffic violations. Well, you know, if he wanted to die, all he had to do was order something at the drive-thru. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, we have a very special segment coming up here. So, here it is.
This is the Stuff File.
It's time for another retro interview with a celebrity that is no longer with us. This time around, it's a chat I had only just 8 months ago, back in November of 2014, with a legendary actor who sadly left us this past week. Theodore Bekele was a true Renaissance man. He had an illustrious career as an actor that spanned more than 75 years, conquering stage, film, literature, and music. Theodore was working almost right to the end. We had him on the show because the Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning actor was also the driving force behind the theatrical release of Theodore Bekele, In the Shoes of Shalom Aleichem. And there was also his memoir, simply titled Theo, an autobiography. We chatted with him on the line from California. Here is that conversation now. It is a pleasure and an honor to have a chance to talk with you. I don't even know where to begin. You have done so much. So let me start by asking you, is there anything in your career that you haven't done that you still want to?
No, I haven't done ballet, and I don't want to do it because I'm not good at it.
Excellent. Fair enough. I have to mention, one of the things you're also known for is you've done shows like Fiddler on the Roof. You've done it both on Broadway. You've done it in a touring company. I actually saw you perform in Fiddler on the Roof when you came to Montreal several years ago. So I want to ask a question about performing both on Broadway and both on tour. Are the audiences different?
Yes. They are and they are not. It depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for the audience reaction, do they react to the same things? Do they laugh at the same places? And are they moved by the same portions of a play? They're alike. They're different because regional differences become evident. There are some people in the South laugh at different places and laugh louder and laugh harder and longer. Jewish audiences tend to laugh at different places, again, because of the familiarity of things, especially when you're talking about a show like Fiddler. So there are differences in when the ethnic makeup of the audience is predominantly Jewish, for example. I could tell, when I was doing Fiddler, I could tell within the first 8 minutes of the play what percentage of the audience is Jewish.
Mm. With a career that, as I said, has spanned 75 years, when you first started acting, did you have a vision or a goal or an idea of where your career has gone? In other words, have you been surprised by the directions your career has taken you in the last 75 years?
Thankfully, yes, I have been surprised. I just set out to be a good performer, a good singer, a good conversationalist, an intellectual, a well-read person. I later branched out into places, and of course I'm also a liberal. I come from a socialist home, and my involvement with labor unions and with left-wing politics followed naturally from that. As a human being, I was involved in causes. As a performer, I branched out into all of the aspects of performing. I started with the theater, which is the most important medium there is. But then I did movies and I did television, and they each of them demand a different attitude and different technique. And I'm glad to say that I was able to master them to a degree of professionalism and proficiency that proved to be right.
You mentioned that theater is to you is the most important, and you then transitioned into films. Now, one of the things that you are known for is you also originated the role of Captain Von Tramp on Broadway. I've had the opportunity to talk to some other actors about this as well. I'm just curious to know how you feel about the fact that the opportunity didn't come your way to play that in the film.
I really was, for 5 minutes, I was upset about that, naturally. Yeah. But frankly, it wasn't in the cards, because on stage, the star of the play was Mary Martin, and she was exactly 10 years older than I, which on the stage you can get away with. There was no way that she could play this role in the movie. And since they couldn't take her, they couldn't take me. They're not politic.
You also mentioned the fact that you are politically active as well, and I'm just wondering, especially in this day and age of social media, how would things be different as far as you're concerned? I mean, you've involved yourself in many causes over the years, many controversial causes that sometimes having a certain notoriety, a certain public forum, can be helpful to somebody's getting their point or view across. It could also be damaging to one's own career. Were you ever concerned, being so politically active, that it might hurt you as an actor?
No, I was never concerned. You follow your beliefs wherever they lead you, and consequences be damned. You cannot play games with your own intellectual honesty, and you cannot withdraw. For example, if you see injustices and you fight them, and you tread on some toes fighting those injustices, your career may suffer, but I would be not true to myself if I would desist from entering the fight.
I want to talk a little bit about the theatrical release, Theodore Bekele, In the Shoes of Sholem Aleichem. This is a person you're very, very familiar with, having played one of his characters for many, many years. Tell us about this particular film.
Well, my life and the life of Sholem Aleichem intersect on so many levels. In the beginning, of course, when I was a boy, my father read Sholem Aleichem around the dinner table regularly in Yiddish. And we had 36 volumes of collected works on our bookshelves. Then the Nazis came, and in short order, we became refugees, and they confiscated everything we owned, including the books. I tell of this in the film as well. And we had to leave with one suitcase each. And what hurt us most was to have to leave the books behind. And my grandmother actually liberated the books from the clutches of the Nazis by sitting in the anteroom of that warehouse where they were being kept, a warehouse that was marked the enemies of a property of the enemies of the Third Reich. And she wept, she cried. And until that Gauleiter in charge of that place said word to one of his minions, "Get that old Jewish woman out of my sight. I don't want to see her anymore. I'll sign off on anything she wants. Just get her out of here." And he did, and she liberated our things. And after heavy payment, they were shipped to us. By that time, we were in Israel, but Palestine it was then. In Tel Aviv, when it arrived in Tel Aviv with swastikas plastered all over the container, and we had them. And then the books traveled on, and then after my father died, I shipped them to Amherst, Massachusetts. Yiddish books were well cared and cared for in that place. And then when I started working on my play and on my film about Sholem Aleichem, I needed them, and I called Amherst, and they sent me the same set of books. So books have legs.
Yes, and it certainly has a very strong history, not only just in history, but within your family as well.
Oh, yes. My father spoke Yiddish. He also spoke brilliantly, spoke Hebrew. And with my mother, I spoke German. We were a polyglot family.
The amazing career you've had, as I also touch on the fact that you have your autobiography out, Theo, an autobiography. Is it kind of cathartic to look back at your life and put it down on the page?
It was interesting to write the autobiography, and wasn't very difficult. I wrote in dressing rooms, I wrote in on trains, on planes. The only thing that I had trouble with was dates. I have frankly had to look myself up to find out what came before what. Other than that, I remember times and I remember places. I remember events. I remember people. But I couldn't remember the sequence of them very well. But luckily, in this day and age, the data is kept somewhere.
Well, the legacy of the work that you have put out so far, and I say so far because I'm sure there's more to come, is just absolutely amazing. And I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us on the program.
Thank you for talking to me. I'm looking forward for the movie to be shown in Canada. That's really my next wish and desire, because Canada has always been kind to me, and I'd like to be kind to Canada.
Everybody was kind to Theodore Bacall, not just Canada. The love for him was for not only his acting and singing skills, but also for his humanity. He will be missed. We spoke to him back in November of last year. Sadly, he passed away on Tuesday, July 21st, at UCLA Medical Center at the age of 91.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about drive-in movie theaters plus arranged marriages. And, of course, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. But right now, more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, no court and total dismissal, wrote Becky Rare, a surgical nurse, a volunteer soccer manager, a married mother of two. She wrote that in an email to a reporter. The 47-year-old said, "I'm free." Becky conceded that she got a warning before her dog's license expired, then another notice, and even a home visit to warn her that a warrant would be issued for her arrest. But somehow she's still shocked to have discovered that it was a criminal matter in Kalamazoo County, Michigan. "I had every intention of taking care of it, but with the end of the school year and my job, it just totally got put on the back burner." She did get the license renewed, but not until the warrant had been issued. After she got a letter telling her to turn herself in, she went to the jail, expecting to clear things up quickly. Per procedure, she was booked. Per usual practice, when there was no other problem, the case was dismissed at the prosecutor's request. Meanwhile, as Becky's story caught attention, the county dog licensing office reported a major surge in Kalamazooans renewing late dog licenses. See how well fear of prosecution works? Apparently, you can sing Glenn Miller's "I've Got a Gal in Kalamazoo," but if you're singing "I Got a Dog in Kalamazoo," it's going to cost you. Okay, moving right along, 30-year-old David Penske was going down a Billings, Montana street in broad daylight while standing on a home's deck when he was killed in a freak accident. Wait, what you say? Well, the deck, which had been removed from a mobile home, was being towed down the street by 36-year-old William Bodie Flint. The deck was not on a trailer and did not have wheels. The two men, both from Arizona, had found it, and Penske apparently decided to ride it. About 200 feet later, the deck hit a curb and Penske was thrown off. He was helicoptered to a hospital where he died later that night. After the crash, Flynn allegedly cut the deck loose and took off, but returned to the scene an hour later. He was arrested on multiple charges, including criminal endangerment, leaving the scene of an accident involving death and serious injury, driving without proof of insurance, and driving under the influence. Fourth, by the way, or subsequent offense. He was held on $75,000 bail, and if convicted, faces up to actually a minimum of 13 months in jail and up to 5 years in prison on the DUI charge alone, which means he can get other charges. So, yes, the Darwin file in this case, because, as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. Gee, maybe if he does go to jail, or when he goes to jail, because he's going to, maybe they can install a deck outside his cell window. Okay, police were called to a Kingsport, Tennessee grocery store after a woman allegedly attempted to pay with counterfeit money. When the officer arrived, he was handed the bill that he could tell had been printed on a regular computer paper with the two sides glued together but falling apart. Now, according to the police report, the officer then searched the purse of 45-year-old Pamela Downs, where he found a counterfeit $100 bill printed in black and white with an upside-down back. Downs was arrested and charged with criminal simulation and counterfeiting. At the jail, Downs allegedly admitted to printing the money in her apartment. Now, according to the report, she explained that she was allowed to print her own money because she'd read online that President Obama had made a new law allowing people on fixed incomes to do just that. See? You can't always believe what you read online, but apparently you can always blame President Obama for just about anything. A Vermont woman has pleaded guilty to riding with her 5-year-old son on the roof of a station wagon holding on to the cargo rack as the vehicle traveled at least 50 miles an hour. The Caledonian Record reports Lindsay Perkins of Newport pleaded guilty in June in Orleans Superior Court, avoiding trial on charges of providing false information to a police officer and cruelty. A charge of reckless endangerment was dropped. Police say the vehicle, operated by 20-year-old Nicholas Nobaris, was traveling at speeds of 50 to 55 miles an hour on Route 14 in Coventry in May. Authorities say a concerned citizen came to police with pictures of Perkins and the child riding on the roof. Perkins was sentenced to 1 to 3 years in jail, all suspended except for 4 days. Nobaris pleaded not guilty to reckless or gross negligent operation of a vehicle and reckless endangerment. You know, that kid is going to have stories to tell in the future, I think. That is, if his now fueled taste for daredevil stunts doesn't lead to him being a Darwin file story later in life, like the guy 2 stories before. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a court in Germany fined a 23-year-old man in July after he admitted that one evening last year, he put 4 or 5 drops of a sedative into his girlfriend's tea without her knowledge, so that she would doze off for the evening and not bother him while he played video games. She had come home after a hard day at work, expecting peace and quiet, but became agitated and started complaining about her boyfriend's machine gun fire game. Now, one can only hope that this is her now ex-boyfriend, because, you know, drugging a woman is not cool for whatever reason. There's a new verb for that in the vernacular. It's called cosbying. As for the boyfriend, sure, enjoy your video games, but have you ever heard of a little thing called headsets? Just asking. Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? As I've mentioned many times before, much of my youth was spent working in movie theaters, including 2 summers I spent working at a drive-in cinema, so I do have a love for the big screen. But the big outdoor screen is not as popular as it once was. For instance, in its heyday in the 50s, there were over 4,000 drive-in theaters across the United States. Today, there are less than 400. A recent Entertainment Weekly magazine article featured a great story on one of the three remaining drive-in theaters in the state of Connecticut. The Pleasant Valley Drive-In Theater is owned and operated by a husband and wife team of Tim and Donna McGrain. And Donna McGrain joins us on the line right now from Connecticut. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to do this. I know you're a very busy lady because you and your husband also run a restaurant called McGrain's on the Green. Is that correct?
We do. Yeah. Open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Excellent, excellent. Now, the drive-in theater that you own, you have a personal connection to this because I understand your parents used to work there when you were a kid.
I grew up there. My mom worked in the kitchen. She ran the concession stand, and my dad ran the projectors.
And when the time came, because your parents didn't own the drive-in, but when the drive-in came up for sale, I understand both of your parents said, maybe this is not a good idea for you to take this on.
They thought it was the worst idea ever. And I knew nothing about the movie industry, the theater industry. I just had such great memories of the place that I just had to have it.
So
my husband said, well, we'll give it a try. And we did.
Okay, so how many years have you owned it now?
19.
Wow.
This is our 19th summer.
And as I mentioned in the introduction, the number of drive-ins have dwindled over the last several years. Why do you think that yours has managed to survive, one of only three that are now in the state of Connecticut?
Because we put our heart and soul into it, that's why. We make it very family-friendly. I always show a children's movie first, then a PG-13 second. There's not a lot to do around here. It's very rural, and so many people have such great memories of the drive-in. The one other big drive-in in the state is clear across the other side. So I do a great business down there. I mean, not enough to live on. We're only open 5 months of the year because of the weather here, but we draw a great crowd. So.
And it's not only that you're open a few months of the year because of winter and whatnot, but you're also not open the entire week. You're only open, if I'm not mistaken, from Thursdays to Sundays. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was the
town that I'm in has about 15,000 people.
Was it always that way, or was there a time when the drive-in was open 7 days a week in the summertime?
In the 40s and 50s, it was open 7 days a week, and they didn't close until December 1st, and they opened back up February 1st.
Wow,
of course, people didn't have TVs in their homes. I mean, unless you were halfway wealthy, you didn't own a TV. So people would come to see, like, the war news. They would always show the war news first before the movie started, and that's where people got all their information.
Now, one of the things that has seen the demise of many a drive-in theaters is the fact that it's very expensive to own and operate the new equipment that is required, digital projectors. Now, you have a digital projector that you put in last year, but would you say that that is the major reason of demise of the drive-in theater, or have there been other factors?
I think there's a lot of factors over the year. One of the big ones being that the property is worth more than the theater makes. But, you know, in these past 5 years, I'd say absolutely it's these new projectors that no one that runs a drive-in movie theater can afford. Because they're not, anyone that's running a drive-in movie theater and keeping it operating isn't running it because they're getting rich off it. They're only running it because they love it so much. And, no one can afford that kind of money.
Okay, so you said this is something you had to do. And I'm sure when you first started almost two decades ago that as an owner that there were some difficult times along the way. But having said that, what really is it about owning this particular drive-in theater that gives you such a kick and such a rush?
I think, and maybe because we own the restaurant too, everyone that comes to the drive-in is happy. Everyone comes in happy. Everyone leaves happy. Everyone's happy to be there. And you get to see parents spending quality time with their kids that, you know, probably during the week they don't get a lot of time to do, or it's sitting in front of a TV, and people don't even come so much to see the movies. They come to visit. They come to tailgate. They come to picnic with their friends or meet new people. You know, on a Friday, Saturday night, there would probably be 200 kids down front playing kickball or frisbee or just having a great time with people they've never met. And it's just a whole different experience that people don't get nowadays. You know, it's something from the olden days that people don't do nowadays. And I get so many grandparents bringing their grandchildren. They say, well, we want our grandchildren to see a drive-in before they don't exist anymore. And it's just a kind of a neat experience that you can't get anywhere else.
Do you think there will come a time when it doesn't exist anymore?
No. Nope. Over my dead body, but I don't. I just think there's enough people out there that, you know, have the drive and the heart to keep them going, unless the movie industry puts us out of business. That's the only way it would happen.
You talk...
You know, and if it hadn't been for the community, the surrounding towns, I would be out of business. Because if they hadn't stepped up and had this giant fundraiser last year, I wouldn't have my digital projector. I would be shut down right now.
Yeah, we should mention the digital projector cost about $80,000. You had a fundraiser which raised about 21 or 1,000, I believe, which was the down payment for that?
It allowed me to make the upgrades I needed to make electrical-wise and get the projector in there. I've got, after this season, I'll have 3 more years to pay it off.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned the lore of the drive-in theater these days and how the families come out. But you, as you mentioned earlier, you spent your entire life around this drive-in theater. So what are your fondest memories when you were a kid of the drive-in experience?
I think... You know, at 5:30 in the afternoon, my mom giving us dinner, getting us in our pajamas and putting us all in the back of the station wagon with our sleeping bags and pillows. And it didn't even matter what was playing. I mean, I'm sure we saw stuff we weren't even supposed to be seeing. But, you know, and then she would haul us down and park us outside the concession stand. And her and my dad would both work all night. And we were in the car. We'd get to meet kids we didn't know and play and, you know, either fall asleep or watch the movie afterwards while they work. And I just, great memories from your, you know how certain things stick out from your childhood more than others that you just recall so fondly, and that's it with me.
Mm. Now, I came across the excellent article in Entertainment Weekly magazine in their paper edition. And of course, if you look in the magazine, they move you on to the online version for an even more in-depth story. How happy were you? First of all, how did they approach you? I understand they spoke to you last year to do this story, but how happy were you with the result of the story in Entertainment Weekly magazine about your Pleasant Valley drive-in?
Ecstatic, and it's kind of a funny story because I got a call from Anthony Bresnikan, who's the senior writer for Entertainment Weekly. I got a call from him last year in August, and he told me who he was and that he was looking to do an article on a drive-in, and he asked me several questions, and then he said, okay, thank you very much, and he hung up, and I thought, oh, you know, he didn't like what I had to say, and I was kind of disappointed. And I got a call from him the next day, and he told me that he had been literally calling every drive-in that's still in existence because he was looking. He didn't want to do this article on all drive-ins, only on one specific drive-in, and he wanted to find the right drive-in. And he'd been just making phone call after phone call, and something I said to him, he knew that ours was the one he wanted to do the article on. So, I was so excited. He came out. He spent 5 days out here. Of course, they had a huge shakeup, I guess, management-wise over the winter, and that's why it's taken almost a year to get the article in. But we've had just such great response on it and drawn a lot of attention to us. So it's exciting.
I'm sure, too, that the article will be good for business. I wouldn't be surprised if you become a Connecticut, if you're not already, you'll become a Connecticut tourist attraction.
That would be really nice. That would be great.
We should mention, too, that you guys have a website. It's PleasantValleyDriveInMovies.com. People can find out more information about what your establishment is all about. And I want to give a plug to your restaurant again. It's McGrane's on the Green, McGrane on the Green. Tell us a little bit about that very quickly. We have less than a minute.
Cooking is in my husband's blood. He's been doing it since he was 15, and we had a bigger restaurant. We ran for 16 years, got tired, sold it, and 2 years later, he couldn't stand being without. So now we have a little bit smaller place, but like I said, we're open breakfast, lunch, and dinner, pizza. We have free delivery. Great little family place.
Excellent. In addition to running the drive-in, you also do some fundraisers and things for that's for the community as well, correct?
Yes.
What is one of the ones you did recently?
We had a car show in June. We try to do four in the summer and each month to raise money for a different local organization. And in June, we raised money for the Buford Fire Department. This Saturday, we'll be raising money for Fisher House. August is going to be Hands of Grace, which is an organization that gives clothing and food to local people that need it. And September is undecided yet, but we'll come up with a very worthy organization.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of great things within your own community, and clearly what has been a labor of love for you has turned into a fun business for you and your family. Congratulations on the article in Entertainment Weekly, and congratulations on the success of your drive-in and your restaurant. Thank you very much for being on the program with us, Donna.
Thank you. If you're ever in Connecticut, make sure you stop by the drive-in.
Oh, I will. That's Donna McGrane, owner of the Pleasant Valley Drive-In Theater in Connecticut. Sounds like a great place. You can find more information by going to their website at PleasantValleyDriveInMovies.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at TheStuffFile.com. You'll also find the link to that excellent Entertainment Weekly magazine article that I mentioned earlier. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0310, and you'll find all of those links I've just mentioned. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. For millions of baseball fans who attend big league games each year, the possibility of catching a foul ball is one of the attractions of the game. According to one study, as many as 53,000 foul balls are caught by happy fans each year. However, if lawyers who just filed a class action lawsuit against Major League Baseball have their way, a lot fewer fans will be leaving games with a souvenir ball. Under the lawsuit, all ballparks, including the historic Wrigley Field in Chicago and Fenway Park in Boston, would be required to extend protective netting from behind home plate all the way to the foul poles in left and right field. The lawyers argue that warnings about foul balls printed on tickets, posted around the ballparks, and mentioned over the PA system are not enough. Let's be fair, serious injuries do happen, and baseballs have been flying into the stands for decades, even before Babe Ruth was playing. But do we really want a policy like this that affects millions of baseball fans to be decided by one lawsuit? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And we are in the home stretch here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We do have an idiot of the day, as we normally do, to end off the show coming up a little later on. We'll get to that in a matter of moments. And we do have a guest coming up in just a matter of moments. You know, usually we have some more Stuff File news story to share with you before we get to our final guest on the program. But we somehow seem to have gotten backed up in time here on this particular edition of the Stuff File program, which, by the way, is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So what we're going to do right now, basically, is just go directly to our next guest. We're not going to pass go. We're not going to collect $200. We'll just get to the next guest, okay? So here we go. Ask most people, and they'll say the concept of arranged marriages is outdated in today's modern world. But Sam Mack, an American of Muslim descent and an experienced diversity and multicultural trainer and facilitator, says there are many benefits to an arranged marriage. Now, Sam joins us on the line right now from Virginia. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I'm willing to bet that there are a lot of people, because I know I'm here in Canada, and I know there are still a large number of people who come from other cultures who live here in Canada who still have arranged marriages. And I wouldn't be surprised if that were the same in the United States. And maybe the general population would be surprised at some of the numbers.
Yes, and you know, I think the appeal of arranged marriages is that they last really long. And it's because they don't just look at the initial physical attraction or what the person does or what you have in common. There's a lot more elements that make a marriage last. So a lot of times in arranged marriages, you're getting family buy-in on the front end, which is, if you've been married, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes dealing with the in-laws, but if they kick you, it can be an issue, right?
Now, your parents have been in an arranged marriage, and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary?
Yeah, they will be, 50th anniversary in 2 months, and they've been happily married for 50 years now. It was kind of funny. My grandmother picked out 10 guys that she thought would be good for my mom. And so she had my mom briefly meet all of them at family functions, family dinners, social events. And then my mom kind of ranked them, and my dad ended up being the big winner. And that's how they ended up getting married. So all their friends, even that have migrated to the U.S., have had arranged marriages. And believe it or not, they're still together.
Now, how about yourself?
So I had, my mom and dad did have a bunch of probably like 6 guys that they showed to me. But back then I was getting my master's in electrical engineering, right? Peter, I was like bucking the system. I was going to be one of those young and free and never married, never have kids. And ended up meeting my husband, who is also born in Pakistan in grad school, and fell in love. And next thing you know, I'm married with 4 kids.
Okay, so you have bucked the trend of your family tradition. Which is interesting because even though you have done something differently and what's considered more North American in style, you're not against the idea of arranged marriages. So it's just something that wasn't necessarily for you at the time, but you're not against the idea, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I kind of took some of the benefits of arranged marriage in, as in I looked at the cultural background, I looked at the language commonality, I looked at the common goals, I looked at him from an arranged marriage process where you kind of see where is that person going, because a lot of times it's easy to fall in love, but then you end up going 2 different directions, and that makes it a tough relationship to navigate. The other thing is, if you look at our culture right now, Canada and the U.S., you've got eHarmony, you've got Match.com, you've got Zeus, millions of other websites that are computer-arranged marriages. Because for some people, their picker outer is just broken. And have you ever had a friend that every time you go out with them, they're attracted to the wrong person? And you keep wanting to tell them, no, no, no. And they just feel like, well, they're so cute. And they're like, wrong, wrong, wrong. And so in arranged marriages, they kind of look at something beyond just, are they cute? Is their initial attraction?
One of the things that I find rather interesting in a almost in a crass kind of way is that as silly and as dumb as I think it is, ABC has turned arranged marriages into The Bachelor.
Basically, that's what it is. It's you have those people, but they've made it a little sensationalized. In a traditional arranged marriage, you kind of look at the family, but think about it this way. Think about the pressure that, let's say you're in college or early 20s, you have on dating, putting your best foot forward, spending all this money, getting dressed, taking people out to dinner, all that pressure, it's just kind of gone. You go into the South Asian countries, you go into the Middle Eastern countries, and they're like, are you going to get married? Yeah. You know, mom will take care of it. There's no pressure to perform and be someone you're not. They know that your family's going to match you up with someone that you like.
Okay, so you're married yourself. You have 4 children, you say?
Yes.
Would you arrange their marriages?
I have given them a lot of guidelines. If they would go for it, I would totally arrange their marriages. Totally. Because here, the benefit is that sometimes, like my oldest son, you take him, okay? He's a little bit shy. He's a little bit inward. He needs someone that would bring him out. And he needs someone that's, that can handle that. He's the absent-minded professor. So he would need someone that would complement that. So I would look for someone that would complement those features on it. On the other hand, he's very book smart. He's a very tech smart. He's very computer savvy. You know, good staff favor, even though he's a freshman in college. So he would bring that to the table, but I think I would find someone that would bring out the best in him. because I see so many great things in him.
And your children, which I would assume now you would be, you could consider second generation North Americans, how receptive are they to the idea?
You know, it was kind of funny. One day we all went on Match.com and made a profile just to see what, if the computer arranged the marriage for us, what would it come up with? But, you know, right now they're rebelling on everything, okay? They're teenagers. And I'm getting whatever I can out of them. So right now, my goal is to have them show up for school, not complain about homework, and get out of bed when I ask them to in the morning.
On a more serious note, people seem to question, sometimes in derogatory ways, things they do not understand or cultures that are of a mystery to them. Now, you are an American of Muslim descent, and you go around talking about the differences and the diversities of your background. Has it become something that's become more difficult in a post 9/11 world for you to do that?
Yeah, it's definitely harder. You know, sometimes you feel like an outsider in your own country. But what I wanted to do, and I think 9/11 propelled me, was to show the commonality between the two countries, the commonality in value and culture. That's across the board. I mean, you go anywhere in the world, the U.S., Canada, people want a better education. People want better lives for their kids. People want safe, stable environments. And that's global. It's not, you know, only in the West we want this, and in, you know, everybody else wants something else. And I think for cultures from the Middle East and in Pakistan, having that security blanket of the arranged marriage, it just helps them not wonder about if they're going to get married, not wonder about if the in-laws are going to like them or accept them, and not have all that stress that's associated with, you know, finding the right one, finding the soulmate.
In some Western countries, they don't understand or don't want to comprehend the idea of arranged marriages, and in some jurisdictions, they are trying to actually outlaw it. Are there places in the United States where you can't get an arranged marriage?
You know, they would have to outlaw all the dating sites. I don't think there that I know of that will not do an arranged marriage. But I will tell you, there's a lot of social stigma to it. And for some reason, it's that it's oppressive to women, that the woman is kind of sold off into this relationship that she really doesn't want and has to go and deal with it. It's not at all like that. It's more of a compatibility issue. And, you know, to avoid divorce and to avoid problems down the road by looking at the factors that matter up front.
Well, I think the way you described it in describing why you would want to help your son and describing his personality answers that question perfectly.
Exactly. And, you know, you want your kids to be happy. You want your kids to be happy. And have you ever had someone that's just dating Mr. Wrong? And you just want to say, look, no, you know, this is going to end up in heartbreak. And sometimes I've had to sit back and watch her go through heartbreak and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. So if there was an arranged marriage and all of us friends had votes, she would have never been with the guy.
Now, some of the things you talk about, I guess people can find information about what some of the things you're discussing right now on your website?
Yes. They can go to speakerauthormotivator.com, and I have a great free video that they can go ahead and download and learn about some of the things that are common between Islam, Christianity, Canadian culture, and U.S. culture.
Excellent. Sam, thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us on the program. It was a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here.
Diversity and multicultural trainer and facilitator Sam Mack. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0310, and you'll find the links to Sam's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police say a New York City man driving a stolen car took the wrong road and ended up lost and without gas in Pennsylvania. State police said 26-year-old Christian Osorio left Queens and was headed to Syracuse, New York. State police said Osorio got lost and ended up on the side of Route 33 in Plainfield, Pennsylvania. That's when a state trooper arrived to help and discovered the car was stolen. Osorio is held on $15,000 bail, charged with receiving stolen property and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. So, now, the question begs to be asked, why, oh why, would someone who has a plan to steal a car and a destination of where they want to be not consider the possibility of perhaps knowing how to get there, where they're going, and also making sure that you have enough fuel? Or, at the very least, ditch the empty tank vehicle? Well, one reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0310. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0310. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.